Hi, thank you for being here. So today I'm going to be presenting on my experiences learning Mixtec or Hino Ondavi. So it's a self-study, and that is Apuala. That's the place of origin, mythical origin of the Mixtec people or New Davi. It's in southern Mexico in the state of Oaxaca. And Hino Ondavi or Mixtec, Hino Ondavi means the word of the people of the rain. And that's the name that they give themselves, versus Mixtec. That's the Nahuatl name that the Aztec gave to them, and then the Spanish adopted when they arrived in Mexico. So I'm going to refer to it so interchangeably, Hino Ondavi, and sometimes as Mixtec. So because this is a self-study, it's an ethnography, it's very important that you know a little bit about the context and where this started and who we are. So in the summer of 2016, so just last summer, I was able to travel to Oaxaca for a 6-week intensive Mixtec language program. And this was sponsored by FLAS, that's Foreign Language Area Studies, sponsored by the Department of Education in the US, given through universities to study foreign languages that are not commonly taught. So, although Mixtec and other minority languages are obviously not on the list, they apply, but languages that are spoken in what is now the United States, they don't. So it's really ironic that I couldn't get funding in Mexico, but then here through the Department of Education I get funding to go. So I just wanted to mention that. And Lucero is my friend and colleague. So it was the two of us learning Mixtec together. So she comes from LA, but her parents come from a region in Puebla where Mixtec is still spoken in some places. So the Mixteca region expands through Oaxaca, a little bit of Puebla, and a little bit of Guerrero, so the neighboring states. And she engaged in this study trying to learn about her heritage. So she already knows a little bit of Puebla Mixtec, which is a different variety. They are not necessarily intelligible. Her partner is a linguist, and she collaborated with him in compiling a dictionary of Puebla Mixtec. So she already comes with some knowledge of a different variety of the language. Whereas me, I come to this study as a non-indigenous language teacher, educator, and a second language acquisition researcher. So our journey so far, we started in Oaxaca back in the summer, so that's us practicing, and then we've continued to meet weekly, remotely until this time. So you'll hear a little bit about this.
Okay.
So I'm gonna talk about many of the challenges that we've encountered. Trying to learn the language where we know that, well, there are very few materials available, very few resources, and we have very few inputs from model speakers or more advanced learners. So our teacher was an native speaker from one of the communities in Oaxaca, but we're learning in Oaxaca City, so we're not getting input other than from him. And it's difficult to visit because it's a little bit remote and you need to be invited by somebody. So there were some constraints where he was our only model speaker, and we have very limited language input and learning through writing and translation. So limit traditional learning methods. So we know that we learn through interaction, and we need to expand from book learning and other traditional methods to really bring, to really learn the language. So we created interaction. This is why we started meeting weekly, and to do informal, very informal role play. So these were just situations that we created, immersive situations, kind of coming from the some ideas from the Master Apprentice program, but adapted to a novice peer-to-peer learner interaction. So no English or Spanish allowed. Yet even so, even though we're both starting first week, second week, we know very little of the language, the interaction still affords many learning opportunities. A lot of second language acquisition research is focused on lab settings, majority languages, English, Spanish, and other European languages, are classroom interactions. So there's very little on learning indigenous languages and just analyzing the conversation when we're not focused on a particular task. They're not structured conversations. So the way that we learn is through self-repair. So you'll see a lot of self-repair confirmations. So one very common way of giving feedback, corrective feedback, in language classes is through recasts. So you're repeating what the learner said, and you hope that they notice it, and then they produce it better, or they correct their own utterance. So I'm arguing that we're not really recasting each other. We're not correcting each other. We're at the same level, and oftentimes, that's the other challenge. We speak different varieties of the language. So oftentimes, I don't know, is she speaking Puebla Mixtec? Is this Huitepec Mixtec that I don't understand? So it's more like confirmations, like, did you say this? And a lot of repetitions. Yet through those confirmations and repetitions, we are able to sustain common ground, meaning really keep this conversation afloat, and learning in the process of communication through this interaction. And also a lot of the embodied interaction, meaning gestures. So helped out by gestures, for example, that turn a talk, so whenever I do this, means, oh, now it's your talk to talk. Or even just with gaze, looking away and then looking back. Since English and Spanish are not allowed, and those are our common languages, then we have to resort a lot of these gestures that allow, that afford this interaction to happen. So I'm gonna show you a few examples of those. This is from the week one. So we've only had 1 week of learning. We're still in Oaxaca doing some recasts. Well, what could be interpreted as recasts, but can be seen as confirmations, and then self-repair. So one example is ku, meaning sister. I pronounce it ku the first time around. Then she says ku'u. And then probably because it's hard to go back to that time, but at the same time, this is one of the affordances of a self-study. You know a little bit more about, like, okay, what was in your mind? Did you know? Did you notice? She says ku'u, and then I repeat ku'u. So there's there's those confirmations that results in learning, and then there's a lot of self-repair. And then it's gonna jump, it's just gonna play all straight. It's gonna go to the fifth week, so after the course, so we know a little bit more. The conversation is less structured, but you see a lot of repetition, a lot of confirmation. So I say something, and then she repeats it. She says something, I repeat it. And a lot of mime and gestures.
Kukweni ku'u. Na nanani yo'o ku'u. Di'u nani lucero. Nanani yo'o ku'u. Nanani. Di'u nani Maria. Dada wa kuya yo'o ku'u.
She looks back at me saying as in, okay, now it's your turn.
Ba'an yehi dita And dubu. Dubu cha. Nada va dita. Nada va dita.
And again, I repeat. She used the pillow.
Humadita. Humadita. What is
and then notice the humadita using the hand.
Ooh.
And then here, look at the sa at my hand.
Ubico. Vi. Vika. Ubico. Iyo ya.
So Mystic is a tonal language, and since we got very little input, it was very difficult to disambiguate between words that can have very different meanings with different tones, and we didn't learn many, or to produce the tones very well. So ya can mean chili, it can mean music, it can mean different things. So I knew I didn't know how to produce it well, but then I did this thing and looked at her, and then she confirmed that she had understood. All right. So of course, very limited materials. This is just one of the things that we got, a very nice alphabet of Mystic and a game that went with it. Sustaining commitment after returning to our universities was another challenge. And then to the first one, well, we tried to create all the resources that were helpful for us specifically, but then some hoping that could also be of use for other people. So when we were together, we did our own like very amateur art, but then also by learning in the process. So nkayu means writing. It also means painting, and we actually realized this while we were making this. Like, oh, do we have this? Oh, we already have this, but it's different. So using all of those as projects where you're learning at the same time. Online flashcards, we have a shared online dictionary, and we started also a blog. So journaling, and one thing that was very important for us was goal setting, to keep that motivation and that commitment going. So Hinton, Vera, and Steele also, in the Master Apprentice program, really recommend setting goals, and for us, long-term projects were very helpful because they got us very excited. So being committed in creating more materials, even if done by learners. So we have a mini children's story, and translating children's songs, and writing a poem in with the Beck Mystic. That was one of our projects. Lucero found a magazine that publishes different literature in with the Beck Mystic, and I didn't feel the theme was education. She wrote a beautiful poem about the path to school, and I didn't feel very comfortable having my voice, given the limited amount of literature materials that are out there. I didn't find comfortable with my voice being one of them, me being both a learner but also non-Indigenous. So the only way that I felt more comfortable is just explicitly acknowledging that in my writing. So this is called We Don't Know, Nyu'un being the word for earth, so land, light, and deity. And talking about Yiviyatandute, meaning Europeans, but literally is the people who came from the other side of the ocean. We don't know the earth, we don't know Nyu'u, and we need to learn Nyu'u. This is Lucero. This is when we were writing this story. We decided to adapt a story that was culturally relevant. So another challenge is, how do you bring the language to culturally relevant domains when you're living in Minneapolis, in my case, or in LA, in her case? So one way that we found is, well, through stories. And this was a story that was culturally relevant. We had the vocabulary. So it's a story that's called Too Many Tamales. So about a girl cooking with her mom. So we adapted it, and then we read it, we told it, we retold it. So it served as a learning opportunity as well.
Nyehi nya Maria. What is the goal?
So I talked a little bit about that challenge. Some of the things that we did. So trying to bring in materials that were culturally relevant or create materials where we had the vocabulary. Our vocabulary, it was, of course, it's very specific to the land, to the area around Oaxaca. So doing things like stories where you could really use that. But in functional terms, it's very difficult. So also coining, we had also very little access. There's a huge dictionary of Mixtec, but it doesn't separate between varieties. So you don't know which word belongs to which variety, and some other words are not there. So this is a project that I was working on simultaneously, and we got very motivated by the prospect of finding our strengths. Neither of us are very good illustrators. She found a different way, and I found claymation. So,
Nuko ni des niño.
This is a short claymation. I'm kind of edited a little bit, but it's all narrating on top of this. Computer. So computer, we call Dukeka. And this is one word that we didn't know, that we just coined. But we knew the word for cable, which is mecate, which is metal mecate. So we decided that the word for computer would be metal head. For telephone, we didn't come up with anything. We just used the loan word from Spanish. Negotiating our way. And the idea is to keep creating. to keep creating some of this. We want to make one for the tamales story, so that we can narrate on top of it. And then hopefully keep creating. The nice thing about this is that you can narrate them in different ways. It's very easy to have different narrations and combine them with the audio. So you can have video, and then change the audio to it. And then can have, ideally, of course, if you can work with community members, do this in within that context. And they're not too hard. They're not too hard to do. And youth these days, you can just YouTube anything. So this is a little bit of the journal that I wrote while I was doing this in October. Kind of getting a little bit frustrated about not being to name, not my world. So how can I use it, for example, in the context of one room in my house in an immersive setting with my daughter, who's 4 years old, if she talks about her ponies and her Frozen and all these things about her school? I don't have words for any of that. Those are just some examples. Yet at the same time, thinking about, well, we do have to bring, we have to make meaning, but we can also bring the knowledge and the meaning from the language into the world. So what does it mean for me to speak the language? What knowledge am I bringing to my world in Minnesota? What knowledge am I bringing, like, from thinking in the language and thinking about, like, Nyu'un in the context of Minnesota? So kind of going both ways. And in terms of learning, this, of course, there's a lot of constraints. We're only meeting once a week. We are both novice learners, so I'm arguing that you can still learn. Of course, there's a lot of constraints, and it's very difficult to become fluent this way. And this is what I'm reflecting about there. It seems to me that we are not as fluent as we were back at the end of the program, but when everything was fresh. However, we are somehow practicing it, and it's been internalized. Some of it has been really internalized and crystallized. So I use the word crystallized. Maybe some of the structures, even though I've forgotten a lot of the vocabulary, have been crystallized. So whenever you decide to go back, pick it up, really have the opportunity and the commitment to dive into it completely, all of this has really helped a lot, and hopefully also produced some helpful insights or materials in the process. Some takeaways, well, there's of course many challenges. I've been finding that there's better with others than alone. Even if you don't have other model speakers and you're just learners, I wouldn't have been able to do it without Lucero. We provided each other with both that interaction that's crucial for learning and accountability to each other. So learning happens through interaction, even among novice learners. And to that, I will say we're often very focused on recording conversations with elders and speakers. Also record conversations with learners and novice learners, because you can learn a lot about the processes of learning and the development process. So both, okay, where do we need to work on, but also on a more global scale, what are the developmental patterns of learners of Mixtec, Ñujundabi, or any other language? So we can really inform the development of materials and curricula. Set goals, keep a journal, act on multimedia projects. They can represent different domains of views, and they can also provide motivation and become future materials. And also reflecting about ways to transfer and apply traditional knowledges in urban contexts. So, Nakutabindi Unu Undo. Thank you. We Google Hangout. Mm-hmm. That was the easier. We shared a lot of Google Docs.
Okay.
So a lot of the writing the stories, writing the songs, translating materials, we worked together on Google Docs and then chatting at the same time.
Nice.
Yeah. And it was a big challenge finding times to meet because we're on different time zones. She's a graduate student in urban studies. I'm a graduate student. So those are the challenges of everyday life, but we always try to find different times to meet.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask about another part of your experience as a learner, as also Lucero's point of view in writing the language. I've noticed that, as you mentioned, it is a tonal language, and I noticed that there's no tonal limitations on the writing map here. And to the best of my knowledge, there is not an analysis, a phonological analysis of Mixtec compounds. So could you comment on what it was like? Was there a discussion about when we write this language, do we indicate the tones? And that aside, what is your experience as a learner learning this tonal system that you really have to learn inductively?
Yeah. It was very difficult because of the very limited input, so that's something that you learn from hearing. And I have experience learning Chinese, so this was a very different experience because of the limited input. And I didn't feel like I got a good feeling for producing the tones. My teacher wrote them sometimes as high, middle, low, with different, so the tilde on the one side, the other side versus none, representing the three different tones. But sometimes he didn't write them. So I made an effort at sometimes. He made an emphasis on disambiguating through context. So the tenses, so verb tenses, they all rely on differences in tone. So we just use adverbs of time. So today versus yesterday versus tomorrow. Because we knew we couldn't disambiguate otherwise. Yeah. But hopefully through more input or listening, I have a few recordings from the teacher. So I think that would help.
Then this adverb support, do you have any sense that is then a part of learner-directed speech, or is strong adverb support for tense disambiguation part of the native, the innate system of each linguistic speaker?
I think a little bit of both. I think there is a strong use of adverb. I'm just speaking from what I think based on what I learned from my teacher. I think there is a strong use of adverb to disambiguate in native use, but we're probably capitalizing on that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.